Good morning. This is Brian Trumbore with your Week in Review for Saturday, May 30th. Think the lusty month of May. Think Camelot. Think Guinevere as she sings that darling month when everyone throws self-control away. It's time to do a wretched thing or two and try to make each precious day one you'll always rue. It's May. It's May. The month of yes you may, the time for every frivolous whim, proper or im. It's wild, it's gay, a blot in every way. The birds and bees with all of their vast amorous past gaze at the human race aghast. The lusty month of May. Alas, May is over. You were supposed to sell away if you were a stock trader. But equities managed to rise for a third straight month as there was growing talk that the global economy had bottomed. We all wait now to see if a true recovery is in the offing, like a sperm whale bursting through the surf, or do we instead drag along the ocean floor, ripping up the coral? Pardon the analogy, but as Guinevere alludes to, what you all do with your personal life is your own business. Though clearly, when looking at the likes of the Taliban or Kim Jong-il the past 4 weeks, you could easily look at the human race aghast. What we do know is June will start out with a rather large bankruptcy. Will we rue the day in May when Uncle Sam decided that it needs to own up to 72.5% of General Motors? Or will we, the taxpayers, make out on our investment? I don't care how you feel about the deal itself. You should want it to succeed at this point, because otherwise the price to be paid will be huge. $50 billion for starters. Here's what we've learned. A UAW healthcare trust will own 17.5% of the new GM, with 10% going to the old GM's creditors, and the option to buy an additional 15% of equity in 7 to 10 years. Because bondholders actually ended up with a better bad deal than what they were facing, there is hope that the bankruptcy process will be swift, a la Chrysler's, which has gone exceedingly well. So well, Chrysler could emerge in its new form next week. In the case of both GM and Chrysler, however, the question is, will the new products sell, and how quickly? For the answers, you need look no further than housing and employment. The sooner these two recover, the better sentiment will become, and the more likely it will be that the consumer, 70% of the economy after all, will feel like once again shopping for a new car. I still maintain that in the case of Chrysler, its new alliance with Fiat will pay dividends. Fiats will sell. And to those who complain the government is going to cram smaller cars down our throats, I say, you are deeply underestimating the public's appetite for same. The American consumer will buy more small cars because they want to. In fact, the other day, my barber, who is as right-wing as they come and who has owned trucks or SUVs as long as I've known him, over 15 years, said to me out of the blue, "You know, I'm sick of paying for gasoline. I'm getting one of those small cars." Granted, not exactly a scientific survey, but everything in life is cyclical. Downsizing in so many ways is in. Back to housing, the S&P Case-Shiller index of 20 major metropolitan areas showed prices fell in March, 18.7% from a year earlier, and we now have home prices off 50.4% from their peak in Las Vegas, 53% in Phoenix, 47% in Miami, and 41% in Los Angeles. But other markets, such as New York, are only off 19.7%, still probably in the catch-up mode, while there are growing signs that bottoms have indeed formed in the likes of Phoenix and parts of Southern California. If you know anything about me, it is that I'm consistent in my opinions. I said last fall that the bottom in housing would come in the April-May time period. Remember, the Case-Shiller data was for March. And I see no reason not to stick with this prediction. April existing home figures, for example, showed a slight rise in the median price over March. So if you expect me to believe there is another 20% down, as some are calling for, I fail to see it. I'm well aware of the record numbers, either in foreclosure or delinquency, 12% nationally, as well as here in New Jersey. The foreclosure picture will continue to worsen, particularly on the high end, as long as the labor data remains putrid. I live in a wealthy area, and in my short drive to and from the office, I see new for sale and for rent signs almost daily. Particularly when it comes to rental properties, no one here has seen it this bad. I'm also well aware that the recent spike in mortgage rates, until Friday's remarkable bond market rally, is worrisome, and of course, threatens to derail a recovery in housing. But again, when you have markets that have already declined 50%, with many beginning to stabilize, then naturally, we are very close to, if not at, the bottom. That's my opinion, and I'm sticking to it. I'm trying to hold off on some big picture stuff until we hit mid-year. But on the topic of debt, I do have to repeat what I wrote about 3 weeks ago, May 9th, in this space. Quote, we have officially entered an era where budget deficits matter. For so long, people harped on the deficits, including yours truly, but in terms of funding them and any negative impact on the markets, it hasn't been an issue. Thanks in no small part to China's economic engine that was churning out double-digit growth and gobs of yuan looking for a home. Close quote. I know that the week before May 2nd of the IMF's pronouncement that the group of 20 leading economies would run budget deficits of at least 6.5% of GDP into 2010 and possibly beyond. It's easy to cry wolf for years and years and then one day say you were right. On the deficit issue, I harped on it but recognized the time for its impact on the markets was down the road. We're obviously now at that point and it has to be a big part of the equation in putting together future forecasts. Just as I said way back, that when housing bottomed, we'd scrape along the bottom for an extended period effect. Some of my critics refuse to remember. The deficits and the accompanying higher rates will impact the strength of any recovery. But back to today. This week we had two leading indicators of consumer sentiment post stronger than expected readings, again, while durable goods orders for April were also solidly positive. The second reading on first quarter GDP was slightly better, minus 5.7% versus the flash estimate of minus 6.1%. But a reading on Chicago area manufacturing came in far weaker than expected, and at 34.9 is well below the 50 dividing line between growth and contraction, so that was a bit disturbing. Globally, however, the news was definitely on the positive side this week. India's GDP for the first quarter came in better than expected, up 5.8%. Japan's industrial production for April rose a super 5.2%, owing to stronger demand for Hondas and Toyotas, while exports in April rose over the March pace, though admittedly down 39% year over year. Consumer spending in Germany and France rose in April, while Eurozone industrial production fell less than expected in March, just down 0.8%. And UK and Aussie home prices rose. For the month of May for the UK and for the first 4 months of 2009 for Australia. Consumer sentiment around the world, it seems, is also improving. As for those who keep screaming about looming inflation, consumer prices fell in Germany in May, while Hong Kong authorities are warning of deflation later in the year. Ergo, I remain very sanguine on the inflation front, despite the huge rally in commodities for the month, the biggest in 34 years. The weak dollars played a large role, as oil in particular had a great month, and speculators are clearly hoping for a far stronger recovery than I myself see. Finally, a note on the savings rate and government policy from strategist David M. Smick, who wrote the following in a Washington Post op-ed. For years, the world has wanted Americans to consume less and to save more. They're getting their wish. The U.S. savings rate, near zero less than a year ago, has soared to nearly 5% of income and could go higher. Total personal savings jumped from $20 billion in the first quarter of 2008 to a whopping $453 billion during the same period of 2009. The real danger is if the savings rate goes to 7 or 8%. If that happens, economic recovery could be seriously delayed. Consumption comprises 70% of our economy. While the reckless, over-leveraged consumption habits of the past hardly made sense, the fear now is that American consumption patterns are on a long-term decline. That means potential economic growth in years ahead could be stunningly low unless the financial system miraculously recovers and business investment picks up the slack. David Smick continues, "The role of upper-income earners has become crucial to savings. There is an undeniable trickle-down aspect to the workings of our economy. Like it or not, those making more than $100,000 a year are responsible for half of retail sales and 70% of the profit margins at retail, according to a study by American Express Publishing and the Harrison Group marketing and research firm. Suddenly, because of the economic meltdown, this group has become highly cautious about spending. Their savings rate has soared," the study reported. "The question is whether Washington is politically demonizing the very folks capable of leading us out of the recession. Affluent Americans have become the new political whipping boy. They are perceived as the illegitimate recipients of the ill-gotten proceeds of financial liberalization and are about to face stiff increases in taxation." David Smick continues, "Policymakers need to ask themselves which development over the past few months enjoys the greater potential to revive the economy. A, the $800 billion stimulus package that produced millions of rebate checks worth several hundred dollars, or B, the $3 trillion stock market jump since the March 9 low, which has relatively cash-rich, traditionally big-spending Americans looking at their 401k retirement accounts with some relief for the first time in a while. Ultimately, the factor determining the success of the Obama economy will be the level of private demand for durable goods by the end of 2010. Success will require a lot of spending by a lot of high-income earners the president probably doesn't like, and you probably don't like him." That was David Smick. The rally on Wall Street resumed in earnest this past week, despite an absolutely crazy one in the bond pits, with rates first soaring and then rallying back to unchanged. In the end, good news trumped bad, and the major averages all ended with solid gains, up 2.7% for the Dow Jones to 8,500, 3.6% for the S&P 500, and 4.9% for NASDAQ, which is now up 12.5% on the year. That's all for today. I'll be back with you next Saturday, June 6th, and I apologize for the last 2 weeks, but when I'm out of town on Saturdays, there's no podcast. Talk to you later. Have a great week.